So did you get any Apple related stuff for Christmas?
I got some nice winter gloves that I can use my iPhone with without taking them off.
Well, that's no good. This is a Mac podcast. We don't do iOS. This is episode 3 of Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. This week, Dr. Richard Harkness and Johnny Winter talk about backups, backing up software, backup regimes, backing up backups, offsite backups, multiple backups. I hope we've got this backed up. Hello and welcome to episode 3 of Back to the Mac, which we're recording on New Year's Day, so Happy New Year. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Richard Harkness from the northeast of England. Doctor, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, and Happy New Year to you, Johnny, and to everyone else who's listening.
Happy New Year. The slightly different format this week. I know it's only episode 3 and we don't really have a fixed format. We're still working it out as we go along. Jacob can't be with us today, or he may be able to be with us later and we can do some magic with editing, but it all depends upon the quality of his internet connection later. So Richard and I have chosen a slightly different format this time. We're going to be having a little bit of a chat about backup. Backup, I think, is something that people don't really think about until they need it, and by then it's normally too late. Richard, you've been using Macs for a few years now. What have you been doing in terms of backup?
Well, I was indoctrinated relatively quickly because I went and took the lessons at the Apple Store when I first bought my Mac. So I was very quickly, I think almost in the first lesson or two, introduced to using Time Machine. So I've had a regular Time Machine backup going almost since I began. If there's anybody out there who's got a Mac and they're not using the Time Machine or don't know what it is, you need to turn that setting on right now. And if you haven't got an external hard disk, then get yourself online and buy one quickly. Because as Johnny said, it's usually right at the moment when you lose everything that you think, why didn't I do that? And there are some real horror stories out there of people having lost really important data.
Now, I think with Time Machine, which is the software that's baked into OS X, it's been there since OS X Leopard, which is about 4 years old now. Since then, you've had Snow Leopard,
yep,
Lion, and now we're on Mountain Lion. Yep. 2013 is going to see the release of OS 10.8. No, we're on 10.8 now, 10.9. Mountain Lion. We're going to see the release of OS 10.9 Tabby Cat.
Yep.
Or whatever they choose. I think they're running out of big cats to name the operating system after. But Time Machine has been around for about 4 iterations of OS 10 now. So it really should be the bare minimum that people are using, I think.
Absolutely. There's really no excuse not to use it. It's so simple to use. And especially if you've got a desktop, you know, an iMac or Mac Mini setup, you just have it sitting there on your desk running the whole time usually.
Now, that's interesting because I think we can make a distinction here between desktop Macs and portable Macs. Mm. Using the Time Machine application in OS X, you really need an external hard drive of some sort. And I didn't really learn this myself straight away. I just went out and bought the cheapest, biggest external hard drive I could. And, of course, that required another socket on the wall to put a plug into. Mm. And it was only later I thought, well, you know, I should be having a look at some of these portable hard drives, the ones that are powered over USB.
Yeah.
Which has the added advantage of the external hard drive closing down when you turn off your Mac.
Yeah.
On the portable Macs on your MacBook Airs and your MacBook Pros, the action of having to physically plug in an external hard drive each time you sit down to use the machine is impractical. It's awkward, and it's one of those things that if you have to do it, you're going to skip doing. You're not going to do it on occasion, then you're not going to do it regularly. And I think that's where Apple's Time Machine comes in quite useful. It is pretty pricey for what it is, but if you're using portable Macs, then I think that, you know, it does pay for itself in terms of ease of use. It's frictionless. You don't need to be plugging things in. You don't need to be worrying about whether your machine's backing up or not. Once you've configured it, it will back data up wirelessly when you're on your network. So I think that distinction can be made between the desktop, you know, and the laptop Macs. And also, if you haven't got a Time Machine backing up your data at the moment, like Richard says, go out and buy an external hard drive. And my advice would be to get one of the portable ones, one that's powered by USB.
I think Apple generally recommend as well that you go for something that has twice the capacity of whatever your hard drive is on your machine, so you can have adequate Time Machine backups.
Now, that is a consideration. Using a 1 terabyte iMac here, I thought 1 terabyte, that's just incredible space. I've never had anything near that, you know, in the past when I've used PCs. I'll never fill up all that space. Yeah. Well, you know, in the time that I've had my iMac, I found it quite easy to fill it up. iTunes takes up space. Photos takes up an awful lot of space.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you're keen with your photos.
It's amazing how these things sort of catch up. And certainly if you're a user of, iOS devices and things, your quality of your video footage that you're capturing now is much higher than it was a couple of years ago. The quality of your photographs is much higher. Therefore, you're using a lot more storage without even thinking about it. So you're going to fill up that hard drive quite quickly. And equally, your music's probably at a higher bit rate as well.
Well, this is the thing. And I think the thing to note for people who aren't using Time Machine already is that, you know, I'm using a 1 terabyte external hard drive with a 1 terabyte iMac. If you have a lot of data, and I'm running at about 55% capacity at the moment, I try and keep it lean, and that's, you know, it's still more than half full. What it means is that the ongoing backups with Time Machine, the incremental backups, it's only going to go back, and I think mine stores about three or four months. Whereas if you have much less data on the machine, the length of time that you can go back in time is much greater. You can go further back in time. And for anybody who hasn't used Time Machine, they really should, just to see the interface. I think this is probably one of the examples, and anybody who's been a regular listener to our 3 shows and a pilot episode, they'll know that I've got a pretty dim view on the skeuomorphic design elements. But, you know, since I've had such a downer on them, I've been seeing skeuomorphic design elements that actually makes sense. And I think Time Machine is a great one because it gives you an interface which is very easy to a non-computer person to understand.
It is,
about,
yeah,
going back in time to retrieve data. For instance, if you went into Finder, it arranges Finders so there's a number of increasingly smaller Finder windows behind it, and on a backdrop of, you know, outer space with stars and stuff, and you do sort of literally step back in time. You can see that happening visually on the screen. It's yeah, very easy to understand, and I've not seen it done quite as well as that with any other backup software, I don't think.
It's always good fun to watch people activate it for the first time, especially if they didn't realise what they've just hit.
It's one of those wow factors in the operating system, isn't it?
Or they freak out.
Yeah.
The
first time that it was shown to me, I certainly thought, wow, you know, that, I mean, it's easy to understand, and it's incredible eye candy as well.
It is very pretty to look at.
So,
but it's just, like, as we said, it's so easy to use. It's so simple. There's no excuse not to be using it, and you'll hit yourself over the head if you haven't been backing up, when it all goes wrong. Because as we all know, hard drives do fail, of SSD and normal spinning platter types, and you never know when that's actually going to happen.
absolutely true. Your hard drive will fail one day, and I think you also need to consider that when it comes to your time machine backup itself, whatever, whether you're using a time capsule from Apple or whether you're using external hard drives on each of your Macs, you need to consider that that is a potential point of failure as well, which is maybe why you need to take it a step further and look at an application. There's two very popular applications, Carbon Copy Cloner and Super Duper. Use those with a second external hard drive in order to take a complete clone of your machine. Now, the advantage of doing this is that, as I say, it takes a complete clone of the machine onto an external hard drive. So if for any reason the hard drive in your Mac was to fail, you could boot and run your Mac from the cloned hard drive. It is just a complete copy. And why should you do that? Why should you go to the trouble of having a second external hard drive backing up in a slightly different way to Time Machine? Well, each time you introduce a new backup to your backup regime, you're halving the risk of losing your data. So if you consider for a moment, if you had a potential hard drive failure with your desktop or portable Mac, and then you found out the external hard drive you were using for Time Machine backups hadn't been working, and you know, if you're unfortunate, that can happen, then a complete machine clone can give you that safety net of retrieving your data.
Yeah, that's another tip. If you are using Time Machine, for God's sakes, make sure that there's actually something going on the hard disk. I know of one person who thought they were doing Time Machine backups, but they weren't allowing it sufficient time to actually complete the backup. So their Time Machine drive was empty, which they only discovered when everything went wrong.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a key point. A backup is, your backups really should be tested periodically to ensure that they are backing up the data that you're expecting. Yeah. Time Machine is pretty much fire and forget. Once you've configured something, I personally use Super Duper. I think it's amazing. I know that Carbon Copy Cloner is extremely popular, and it is a good piece of software. Super Duper is too. The reason I use Super Duper is when you configure it to do a clone of your machine, it changes the explanation and it's set out in plain English as to the actions that you've selected. It sets out in plain English exactly what it's going to do. It's very easy to understand. And I think that that's important, you know, especially when you're involved in doing this. You want to configure it. You want to get on with whatever else you're doing. You don't want to be faffing around with backups. You just want to know that they're backing up in, you know, in the best possible way. And rather than doing a complete backup of 550 gigabytes or more of data each time, what Super Duper can do is examine your hard drive in your Mac and note the changes, and then it just backs up those changes just to bring your external hard drive into line with the hard drive in your Mac, and that saves a lot of time. And another thing that I would say, if you're going to use something like Carbon Copy Cloner or Super Duper to have that clone of your machine, look at doing regular clones of your machine. I have my work machine set to clone each night. Reason being, the number of changes each time it clones will be relatively few. Yeah, if you set it to clone once a week or once a month, then there's going to be a lot more changes, and consequently it's going to take much, much longer to perform that clone, and that could, you know, slow down your workflow. So that's something to consider. Little and often would be my advice on that.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you said that about Super Duper, Johnny, because I never really understood what the advantage of that was over, you know, say, a Time Machine. But obviously I can gather from what you said there that the advantage there is you can't really boot from Time Machine, can you? You have to have a working hard drive in your Mac in order to do the restore.
That's right.
Yeah, so obviously, if you with Super Duper, if you've got a working hard drive, you can have that plugged into USB, boot from that, and then you've got something that's working whilst you're trying to get things fixed.
I believe that's the case. As I understand it, Time Machine will be backing up content in your in your folder, in your home folder, so you know all your iTunes and your films and your documents. It won't be backing up all the system files and such like. That's the way I understand it works, anyway.
Can I take it from that if your hard drive died and you had a super duper backup, could you then connect that to another Mac and run your Mac off there?
Yes, you could.
Right.
So what you could do is if you borrowed a Mac or you had access to another Mac, plug your super duper cloned drive into that Mac. And when you start the Mac, immediately after the startup chime, hold down the Option key, which is often marked Alt on the keyboard. It's the second key to the left of the spacebar. Mm. Keep hold of that key, and then you'll see different icons pop up on the screen, and you can select which drive you wish to boot from. And you can boot from an external drive, a cloned drive like that. Even if it's not the machine that you've cloned from, you could run your system from another machine, just as the host machine, if you like.
Mm-hmm. That's another layer I'm adding to my backup regime now. Then
it's something I thoroughly recommend. And you know, hard drive prices are coming down all the time. I mean, as it is with computers, the spec goes up and the price comes down.
Yeah.
Certainly, I'd recommend looking at it. You can get something like a Western Digital portable hard drive, i.e., one that's powered from USB. If you look on Amazon, other e-commerce websites are available. You can pick them up for about £50-55, which is, you know, for a 1 terabyte hard drive, I think is pretty reasonable to give you that extra peace of mind.
Yeah.
The other thing that I was going to say about booting up on other machines, if you go for a USB hard drive, if it's USB 2, which, you know, your slightly older Macs are going to be, then it is going to be a little bit sluggish. If you go for a FireWire drive, which is going to be a bit more expensive, you will get some improvements in speed. The new Macs are now coming with USB 3, and there are Western Digital and other makes, you know, USB 3 hard drives, which you can use. You're going to get better performance. I've not actually tried it with USB 3 myself. I don't have such a recent iMac.
Mm. And not forgetting, of course, Thunderbolt as well.
Thunderbolt as well. If you can afford it, it's still very expensive.
Yeah, I believe so.
Interestingly, I was seeing that. Thunderbolt. I mean, when we spoke a moment ago about external hard drives powered from the computer itself, Thunderbolt. The current Thunderbolt cables are copper. I'm not clear whether they supply power or can supply power as well.
Mm.
I was reading just today that Intel have a spec for the fiber optic Thunderbolt cables.
Yeah.
Of course, they won't carry power. So, you know, your external hard drives, you're going to need another power socket to power those. But I imagine if you're playing with Thunderbolt, then you're probably using NAS drives or at least a... It's going to be a fairly good external hard drive, I'd have thought. You know, another power socket shouldn't present you with too many problems.
A lot of them are fairly beefy capacities, aren't they? Because I think it's a sort of, at the minute, it's kind of a bit more of a pro market, I would say.
I think it is. When you're looking at something like £45, that's a lot of dollars. It's pretty expensive just for the cable itself.
Yeah.
And all the Thunderbolt drives are coming at a bit of a price premium at the moment as well.
Yep.
So at the very least, somebody who's not using Time Machine, somebody who's not cloning external hard drives, something that I think that they should be doing, if only to back up some important documents, is look at some sort of cloud backup. And there's two that spring to mind immediately for maybe people on a budget or people who don't have too much data to store. The two that I have in mind are Apple's own iCloud, and one that's been around a while, Apple tried to buy, reportedly, is Dropbox. Do you use those services, Richard?
I do. I use both of them for slightly different reasons. I use iCloud more and more so, and started experiment with it and putting files on there. Once I realised that I could get to iCloud through a web browser on PCs at work, and be able to download my sort of administrative files and things like that from there, that made my life so much more easy. It stopped me carrying around a USB stick with me.
Sorry, just clarify, which service was that you're able to use via a web browser?
iCloud.
You can use iCloud via a web browser?
Yep.
Of course you can. Go to iCloud.com, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what? I've never actually bothered to try that.
Yeah, it works pretty well. It's reasonably reliable, I would say. The only thing that is a bit of a bugbear is you can't sort of create folders and things like that in it.
So it's really sort of read-only, is it?
No, you can upload as well.
You know, Richard, every day is a learning experience, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I just had a look at it one day and I thought, my God, this is here. It's free. I'm going to use it.
Well, we should say it's free up to 5 gigabytes in iCloud.
Yes,
that's for backing up your iOS devices and saving documents from different applications that you're using on your Mac. So it is possible to fill that 5 gig space if you become a heavy user, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I have a sort of legacy account from the days of Mobile Me, which I joined when I got my Mac. And so I've been sort of honoured on to a 20 gigabyte plan.
Mm-hmm.
But to be quite honest, I mean, it's not expensive. I think it's only about £25 for a year or something, even if you have to pay for it. So that's a no-brainer. I'll be getting that when that time comes up. The other option, as we said, is using Dropbox as well. Now, the advantage of Dropbox is it's much more ubiquitous, and it is completely cross-platform, isn't it? You can use it on your Mac, your PC, you can use it between Android devices as well if you've got a mixture of technologies at home and work.
And your iOS devices, of course.
Yeah, yes, and iOS and devices. One of the reason I started using that was, well, there were two reasons. To have it as a bit more of a backup for my admin stuff. So for some reason I couldn't get onto iCloud. I could get it out of Dropbox instead, because is it 2 gigabytes free to start with?
You get 2 gigabytes to start with on Dropbox. That comes free. If you have a referral code from somebody, you'll get 2.5 gigabytes. So it's often worth getting a referral from somebody. They'll get a gigabyte as an incentive for recommending you, but you both get extra, so it's a good thing to do. And then you can earn additional space with Dropbox by completing some tasks on their website, such as watching a video, I think connecting your Twitter account, a couple of other things. And then in turn, you can make referrals to people as well. And another thing they do with Dropbox, I think each year they have, I believe they call it DropQuest, which is a number of puzzles, online puzzles that they run. It's a competition. The person who wins, who solves all the puzzles, and it's pretty tough. The person who solves all the puzzles gets, you know, a gazillion gigabytes free for life or something. I may be a little bit out on that, but it's a good prize anyway. But everybody who participates, when you reach certain stages, you'll be awarded another 125 megabytes or 250 megabytes. So they give you another. And a recent thing with Dropbox is if you allow Dropbox to upload your photos, like when you plug in your iOS device or your camera, if you allow it to automatically upload photos to a designated photos folder on Dropbox itself, ostensibly to back up your photos, then they'll award you, I think, up to another 5 gigabytes.
Oh, wow.
So that is worth having a look at, if only to upload 5 gigabytes worth of photos and then turn off the option and remove them, just to give yourself some more space for all your other stuff.
Yeah, I may have a look into that. I've never used that feature before.
Of course, if you don't want to go to the trouble of all those referrals and competitions and, you know, if you just want straight out extra space, then you can just go and pay for extra space. And I think it's something like I don't remember now, $99 for another 50 gigabytes. Or yeah. I think they doubled it to 100 gigabytes. So
yeah.
$100 for 100 gigabytes each year. And again, you don't need to use Dropbox just for backing up. You can use it essentially like a network drive if you use more than one Mac.
Mm.
So you can be using your desktop, your iMac perhaps, saving documents into Dropbox, and then when you come to your MacBook Pro or your MacBook Air, if you've got that matched up to your Dropbox account as well, you can pick up the same information on there, with the added bonus of the data being stored in the cloud for reliability, for safety.
The other issue with using Dropbox over iCloud is iCloud doesn't support certain file formats at the moment, so you will need Dropbox. An example of that, if I remember rightly, I think it's PDF.
Mm-hmm.
iCloud will allow you to upload Word documents and documents created in Pages as well,
mm-hmm.
But it won't let you do PDFs. So you've got to find a workaround for that.
Okay, that's interesting. Does it not allow you can create PDFs from Preview, can't you, and save in iCloud? Does it not allow you to do that?
No, it's the actual .pdf extension. It'll not allow.
I see.
I've tried. I looked at something online which was supposed to be a cheat workaround by actually manually changing the. You know, the sort of changing it from .pdf to .doc or whatever, the file extension name, it didn't work for me, that.
Okay. I think there's a little bit of a distinction between iCloud and Dropbox. iCloud is Apple's sort of attempt to bring an iOS way of working to the desktop Mac. At least this is the way I interpret it. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to remove the file system to an extent.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we've grown up with folders and files within folders and folders within folders, and the metaphor starts to break down a bit when you have multiple folders within folders. That's not how you file stuff in the real world, and it can be easy to lose stuff on your hard drive if you're filing it in subfolders of subfolders of subfolders.
Yeah.
So when we use iOS devices, we don't worry about where stuff is stored. We just know that it's there when we need it.
Yeah.
I think that's the direction Apple is trying to go with the desktop, with OS X. Dropbox is a little bit different. They've sort of incorporated themselves into the file system on OS X, and by having a designated folder, and this is the easiest way to understand it, is how it started out, a designated folder on your computer. Anything that went into that folder you knew would be synchronized with the cloud and with any other machines that were signed up to use your Dropbox account as well. I know they've extended that. You can now synchronize selected folders if you wish to do that. It doesn't have to be just the data in a designated Dropbox folder.
Mm. It's very clever and intuitive how that appears within your Finder, isn't it? And you just drag stuff into it and there you go.
I think it is very easy to understand, and I think that has been a big driver of its phenomenal success, really. The fact that it's, you know, keep it simple.
It's had a huge uptake, hasn't it?
I'm struggling to find people to refer to Dropbox now to increase my free space. I was rather hoping that you didn't know about Dropbox and I could sign you up.
So you could refer me into it, yeah.
Perhaps I can be cheeky and put a referral link in the show notes, and anybody who's listening to this who doesn't have Dropbox, please click on my link and install it, and you'll get an extra half gigabyte space. I'll get an extra gigabyte space, but you'll get a really warm feeling about helping me out. So, you know, we both win.
Excellent.
Now, I got a message from you today, Richard. You've signed up for a different sort of backup service, haven't you?
Yeah, I decided after much contemplation to go for a cloud-based backup solution, a full backup solution, that is, where, you know, which is kept securely. Now,
I think we should say at this point, or maybe we should ask at this point, why would anybody want to go with a potential third, fourth, fifth way of backing up data and go into the trouble of backing it up with some sort of cloud solution? And the reason I'd give for this is, again, you know, each time you back up your data in a different way, you're halving the risk of losing your data.
Yep.
But by backing off-site, really, this is the key thing, isn't it? Is off-site backup. So if you had some sort of catastrophe in your home or your office, then you have a remote backup. And is this your motivation? Is this why you've gone for it?
It is. And the level of sort of redundancy that they have, because they're doing this at a professional level, that they'll have backups of backups of backups.
Did you say which service you're using for your cloud backup?
No, CrashPlan. There you go.
Okay. So tell me why you went with CrashPlan.
It was just one of many that I had heard of, and on other podcasts, I've heard a lot of technology people say that they use
Richard,
it.
Richard, stop. There are other podcasts?
Yeah, apparently, but you don't want to listen to them.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. I just listen to them to get ideas of how we could just stomp all over them.
We've got a long way to go yet.
Yeah. But, so I've heard it and read its name in lots of places, and I believe you yourself recommend it quite highly as well. So.
Yeah, don't blame it on me.
Yeah. No.
Well, I tell you what. I mean, my experience with CrashPlan, I haven't actually paid for their service. I have been following them for a little while now, and the thing that interested me about CrashPlan was the way they've set this up. Is you can either pay them for the offsite backup, or you can set up your Mac. I think they cater for PCs as well. I'm not really sure.
Yep.
Yeah, they do. Windows, Mac, Linux, and Solaris. What you can do is you can use their software, back up to an external hard drive, take it around your mate's house, plug it into his machine. He does the same, and you essentially put your data in your friend's house or office, and it's all encrypted and it's safe, and that gives you the offsite backup, and they allow you to do that for free.
Yeah, which is really, really good, isn't it? I haven't gone for that. I prefer because you still got the issue there of if your friend computer dies or whatever, and I like the idea that it's sort of cloud based.
I mean, you say that. I mean, they will send you, I think, a weekly report on email, which will tell you how much data has backed up, since you last back up, and it'll give you a status. So if your friend's PC falls over and dies and he hasn't told you, you will know within a few days that your data is no longer backing up. And you'll be able to tell your friend to get a Mac.
Well, the plan I went for was over 4 years. So I've invested quite heavily in it. I hope it's good.
Okay. So give me an idea of what you get, what your commitment for 4 years. What's that likely to cost, and what are the benefits? What does it give you?
Well, I can't remember exactly what it was. It was about $200-something, I think. But what that gives you with that is unlimited backup, so you can back up as much as you want, whereas a lot of the other plans are limited to how much you can back up. So say, for example, CrashPlan Plus.
Mm-hmm. Easy for you to say.
Yeah, only gives you up to 10 gigabytes. For the starter package. But the other benefit for the one I've gone for is for the 4 years is it's also a family plan.
This is CrashPlan Plus Family Unlimited.
That's it, yeah. I can back up my wife's computer as well at the same time.
Okay, so I'm just looking at the information on this. You can back up between 2 and 10 computers. I'm sure you could back up one if you only had one. Unlimited storage, back up unlimited amounts of personal files from all your computers.
Yep.
only one low price for every computer your family owns, as low as $6 a month.
Yep.
So, you know, that's not bad at all, is it?
No, exactly.
Okay. For those who are concerned, enhanced 448-bit encryption, secure online storage, no file size limits, web restore, real-time backup, even backs up drives, external hard drives attached to your Mac.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's quite comprehensive.
Okay. So they're saying that Crash Plan Plus provides the security of 3x protection on-site, off-site and online. Well, I don't want to sound like an advert for them because they don't sponsor us, but it certainly looks like an interesting backup. Certainly give you peace of mind.
But, you know, if you want to crash plan, ring me.
So other backup services that have caught my eye, and, you know, I'm not endorsing any of these because I've not really jumped in and used any of them in anger, but certainly services that have caught my eye along the lines of Crash Plan is a service called Backblaze, which is, I believe, quite popular. They provide unlimited data storage, unlimited file size. They'll also back up external USB drives. They'll allow you to use a personal encryption key as well to encrypt the data. $50 for 1 year. But the difference with Backblaze, I think I'm right in saying, is that that will be the price per computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Had Backblaze popped up on your radar at all, Richard?
I knew of it. I didn't go looking at it, to be quite honest. I'd heard so much about Crash Plan. I thought I'm just going for that. You know, when you've had a lot of recommendations from a lot of other people, I tend to be happy with going with that.
Yeah, sure. The do-it-yourself route, I think, is a little piece of software I found a while ago called Arc, which is ARQ. Had you seen Arc at all?
No, I'm just having a look at it there now, but no, I wasn't aware of it and I hadn't heard it mentioned anywhere either.
Okay, it doesn't tend to get as much exposure as I suppose those big sites like Crash Plan and Backblaze that can afford to do the advertising. But Arc is from a company called Haystack Software. You can find them at haystacksoftware.com. Arc uses Amazon web space to provide the cloud storage. You can use Amazon S3, which is simple storage service, or now Amazon Glacier, which is a recent development. I think Amazon Glacier works out to be cheaper than S3, but I think that it's designed for data that's going to be written there and not changed a lot, not accessed a lot. I think that it's really there as a last resort. I may be wrong on that, but that's the impression that I get, the difference between S3 and Glacier. So Arc is an application that you install on your Mac. You have to sign up with an account with Amazon so that you can use their cloud services. And Arc will back up your data. Now, depending on how much data you have, this may work out to be cheaper than going with a service such as Crash Plan or Backblaze, but you really need to do the sums. You need to, it's going to be $29 to buy the software itself, and then you're going to pay Amazon. And when it comes to big companies like Amazon, they love to make it difficult to understand how much exactly you're going to pay.
Yeah.
There'll be charges for setting it up, charges for so much data, charges for accessing it, you know, charges for sneezing on a Thursday. So you could find yourself ending up paying more with sort of a do-it-yourself solution like this than
Sometimes it's difficult to know, isn't it? You know, you might think, oh, I'm not going to access very often, but you might, you know. It's quite hard unless you're very clear about your backup plan from the start.
Well, that's right. And if you start by just backing up some documents, you know, they don't take up too much space, it could be quite cheap. It could be a better option. Start backing up all your music on iTunes. Start backing up all your films. Start backing up all your photos. Now, they can take a lot of space. Mm. And then I think that could start getting quite expensive. Maybe the peace of mind is with Backblaze or CrashPlan that give you unlimited... Is that subject to any fair use policy? I've not seen. Give you unlimited space, and then you can just back up. You're paying a fixed fee. You know exactly what it's going to cost. You know where you are.
Yeah.
Bitkassa. Have you heard of that?
No, that's another new one to me as well.
Bitkassa looks very interesting. It's currently in beta. Mm-hmm. It's due to launch this year, 2013. Fairly soon, I think, from what I've been reading, I think between now and March. Bitkassa is an infinite hard drive. It's a little less easy to get your head round than Dropbox, for instance, which will just be a folder on your hard drive, and you know everything that's in your Dropbox folder will go into Bitkassa. Everything that goes into your Dropbox folder will, of course, go to Dropbox to be backed up. Bitkassa, it does do that. Rather than giving you 2.5 gigabytes, they say that it's infinite. I suppose it means you could buy your 128 gig MacBook Air and stick everything on there, because I think essentially the hard drive, the SSD or the hard drive on your Mac, essentially becomes like a file cache. It keeps on your computer only the most recent files or the files that you're regularly using, and everything else is sort of siphoned off into the cloud.
So you're basically like having a cloud-based external hard drive.
Essentially,
that,
yeah.
That you can access all the time. Right.
That's right.
It's interesting. I think certainly as internet speeds improve, then it'll be an interesting way of working. I guess it kind of is mimicking, what do you call it? Google's laptop that works this way.
The Chromebook.
That's it, thank you. Yeah, it kind of mimics that a bit, doesn't it?
Okay, with Bitkassa, I think that you can set up a folder as in a similar way to Dropbox. Everything you stick in that folder, you'll know will be backed up to the Bitkassa service.
Mm.
I think that you can also tell the Bitkassa application to back up certain folders, so sort of selective sync, so you can tell it to back up your music or your films or your photos or your documents, or you can essentially set it up so it's acting like an external hard drive, so only the most recent data is on your machine. To be frank with you, Richard, I don't think that they've managed to present it in an easy to understand way for the layperson.
No.
I'm having difficulty understanding exactly, you know, how I should be using this or why I should be using it. Whereas Dropbox in comparison is very, very simple to understand.
Yeah.
Everything in that particular folder is backed up.
It's become a household name, isn't it?
I think Bitkassa has a very interesting idea as to how to do this. Telling people they have effectively an infinite hard drive is very, very appealing, very interesting. Mm. I think you can also have it mirror all of your computers, so everything is automatically and continuously backed up. But it's just getting the idea across in a simple to understand way, you know, so that my father could understand it. He's too busy doing other things. You know, than trying to work out the intricacies of some sort of cloud backup service. And to be honest, you know, I've got some experience of these things, and I'm having difficulty understanding Bitkassa.
Yeah.
Although I'm finding myself liking it for some reason. Perhaps because they're saying when they launch, currently it's free in beta, but when they launch, I think they're saying for $10 a month, you can back up everything.
I mean, that is a really quite a keen price, isn't it?
It certainly is.
The only thing with anything new like this is it'll be interesting to see if they get a, if they get a good uptake, whether they can quickly scale up their infrastructure to work fast enough, because it might catch them out potentially in the early days.
It may do. Now, is it Bitkassa that sent people out there continually adding more and more storage. And I don't know whether it was Bitkassa that was sending people out to buy hard drives in computer stores and send them into them, you know, when they had all the floods in Thailand, you know, a year or so ago that
right.
hit the hard drive manufacturing. It may have been, I think it may have been Bitkassa sending people out there because, you know, they're a startup and I think that they were having difficulty scaling up that data storage. So they were getting people to get the storage for them. And, you know, they were basically cracking open external hard drives just to get the physical drive out.
Crikey.
Yeah, I believe that's the case. So, I mean, we've covered quite a lot there, really, on backups. Just to summarise, if you're not using Time Machine on your Mac, start using Time Machine. Dropbox, I think that's really a must. 2.5 gigabytes for free. You know, stick your most important documents in there at the very least.
Yeah.
iCloud, again, I think, would it be fair to say, takes a little while to get your head around?
Yeah, a bit more so. But remember, if you've got iCloud turned on, which you should have by default, then you're already on your, if you've got iOS devices and on your Mac, you're backing up your, I think it includes your photos and music and whatnot, and that's not included as part of your 5 gigabytes. So it's really just for your documents and things.
Right, okay, so that's fairly generous on the space. And then you've got we talked about Carbon Copy Clone or Super Duper to clone your machine to an external hard drive. And then the cloud services for an offsite backup, CrashPlan, the one you've gone with, Backblaze, Arc using Amazon, S3 or Glacier, and Bitkassa. I mean, there's a number of other companies offering a similar service out there. I've not even touched on Google Drive. I don't use it really. But that's another way, I suppose, you could be using space. I mean, there's even Ubuntu One. Sign up for an Ubuntu account and you get 5 gigabytes of storage space, which is, again, I think along the lines of the Dropbox model.
I think the basic thing is, you know, really you want to be looking at having your Time Machine backup. You want to do some form of online backup for your core things, and if needs be, just do it with a free service like we've said, for all your core things. And then you need an offsite backup of some description, be it web-based or physical in somebody else's home.
And for those people who don't want to be spending on a managed service like CrashPlan, Backblaze, et al., just setting up CrashPlan, backing up all your data on an external hard drive, taking it around your mate's house, and you know, getting him to do the same, and hosting each other's, and that gives you the security of an offsite backup of your data.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, one thing I wasn't aware of that, you know, before, and I don't really have somebody else that I can do that with at the moment. But one of the things I'm doing is I'm just backing up my hard drive onto an external hard drive, and physically taking that around to one of my family and leaving it in their home.
Well, that's a good idea. At the very least, I suppose. I think better to look at solutions where you can automate this, but
absolutely.
If you can't do that, then yeah, take a periodic backup and
it's better than nothing, isn't it?
It certainly is, and you know, that's when you'll find out the value of doing this. You know, when your hard drive fails and you need to retrieve some data, then you'll know that you have some data at an offsite location that you can use to retrieve whatever it is you've lost.
So 2013 should be everyone's year of backing up.
I think it's a very important thing to do, and I think we can wrap up episode 3 now, and I'll make an admission. Since I upgraded my 2 iMacs from Lion to Mountain Lion, both of them threw a strop with Time Machine, and I had all sorts of problems, and in the end, I just turned it off. And I haven't been backing up either of my iMacs for the last 2 or 3 months. I've not even been running Super Duper to do the clones. I currently have an iMac in front of me that has 2 external hard drives around the back unplugged. So if there's any New Year's resolutions to be made, I ought to be making one to actually practice what I preach and start doing these backups.
I'm digitally slapping your wrist as we speak.
It digitally hurts. Oh, that's virtually quite hard, actually.
It bloody will hurt when it all when everything goes wrong, Johnny.
Yeah. Now, it's very important that, you know, I'm telling people all the time that they need to back up, and, you know, I need to taste my own medicine, really. I certainly should set them up. Now, another reason it's very, very important to back up your data. The iMac that I use at work has a different hard drive. It has a Seagate hard drive. Mm. And if ever you're looking for hard drives, you'll notice that Seagate are normally the really cheap hard drives.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I have a LaCie external hard drive, which I've cracked open a few days ago.
Mm.
That's a Seagate hard drive. The Seagate hard drive in the LaCie external unit has failed at less than 2 years old.
Mm.
The coming back to the iMac at work, that's a Seagate hard drive, and that's currently under recall from Apple. Until April this year, you can take your iMac back if it has a Seagate hard drive. I mean, that iMac is 3 years old, for example, but take it back to Apple and they will replace the hard drive, because there has been they've noticed that these Seagate hard drives in iMacs are failing too frequently.
Mm.
And in fact, I was looking at a customer's computer a few weeks ago. It was one of the white MacBooks, and that had a hard drive in. I believe it wasn't a Seagate. It may have been, but it's a few years old now, that MacBook. It's probably 4 or 5 years old. And that was previously the subject of a recall from Apple because of the high failure rates. The reason I had it was to replace the hard drive, because the hard drive had failed and Apple are no longer replacing them for free.
Mm.
So these are reasons why you should be backing up your data in at least one way. And it's a reason I should listen to what I'm talking about and back up my data in at least one way. Because at one point or another, your hard drives will fail. It may be a long time, but it's best to be safe in the knowledge that you have your information safe, because you're not going to get those photos back. You know, those are irreplaceable.
I mean, I heard a horrible story, which is a true story, of a chap who his wife passed away, and very shortly after that, I think within weeks of the funeral, his computer died, and he lost every photograph that he had of her.
Wow.
That's really quite horrific, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I bet if we all think we've all got stuff like that on our computers, you know, photos of our children, of our parents who've maybe passed away, you know, things like that, and you're not going to get those things back.
Well, these are the sorts of memories that are irreplaceable, aren't they?
And exactly.
Because everybody uses digital cameras these days rather than film cameras. We take many, many, many more photos. We probably look at our photos less often.
Yeah.
But it's easier to lose that information. You don't have negatives from which you can take new prints anymore.
Yep.
So very important to be looking at backups. Now, I think it was about 2 or 3 minutes ago I was trying to wrap up this show. Before I do that, I'd say that if you use iTunes and you subscribe to iTunes Match, which is $21.99 in the UK, that's pounds. In dollars, I'm not clear on the figure each year. That's essentially a way of backing up your music in the cloud. Doesn't back up films unless you've purchased them through iTunes, I believe.
That's right. Yeah.
But if you suffer some sort of failure, or even if you just reformat the hard drive in your Mac and want to reinstall everything, iTunes Match is a godsend. You don't need to worry about necessarily backing up all of that, because you can just download it all again from Apple.
Yep.
So, okay, episode 3, it's been about twice as long as we intended, but I think backing up your data is a very important subject.
You were owed 30 minutes from last week as well.
I was?
No, the listener was owed 30 minutes from last week because we didn't have a show.
That's absolutely right. Something called Christmas got in the way, didn't it?
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Yeah. So, okay. So, a bumper show for the beginning of 2013. So, effectively two shows for the price of one. Backups. You know, do think about that very soon. If you can, go and if you don't do anything about backups, you know, go and do something now. Sign up for Dropbox. Back up your most critical data. Look at getting an external hard drive. Look at Time Machine. Look at SuperDuper. That's my personal recommendation. Look at maybe one of the cloud services as well. So, Richard, nice talking to you. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
I think that's all we need to say.
All right. Well, before we say goodbye, tell people where they can find you on the interwebs.
You can find me on Twitter at Rich Harkness. You can also find me on my blog at www.areyougettingit.co.uk.
Okay, and I'm Johnny Winter. I'm on Twitter at Johnny_Winter, and you can find a link to a whole load of stuff I've got online if you go to about.me/JohnWinter. I think that wraps it up for episode 3, the first episode of 2013. If you got this far, thanks very much for listening. Say goodbye, Richard.
Goodbye.
3 of Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. Find us online at q.am. That's q.am. Intro and outro music is used with the kind permission of Mr. Tariq Greenfield, composer and producer. Find out more about Tariq's work at tdmss.com.
Apple Macintosh.
There are other podcasts?
Yeah, apparently, but you don't want to listen to them.
Oh, right, okay.